Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Family Jensen by William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by James Lewis, Thomas Penny, Michael John Casey, Thomas Keegan, Nanette Savard, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Bradley Smith, Ken Jackson, David Harris, Colleen Delaney, Yasmin Toison, Christopher Graybill, Eric Messner, Johan Detweiler, David Coyne, Nathaniel Perry, Dexter Hamlet, Patrick Busink, Joel David Santner, Evan Casey, Drew Copus, and Tim Pabone. The Family Jensen, number one.
The temperature in the small stone and log cabin climbed steadily during the afternoon. The single room was about 12 feet by 12 feet. There were no windows, and the door was closed and barred. The only light and air came in through gaps between the logs where the mud chinking had fallen out, and through the loopholes that had been carved in those logs so men who had to ford up in the cabin could fire rifles at their enemies. Three defenders stood at their loopholes, two at the front wall and one at the back, sweat trickling down their faces, and waited patiently for a target to present itself. The oldest of the trio, manning a loophole in the rear wall, squeezed the trigger of a heavy caliber Sharps rifle.
Got that son of a buck! That'll learn him to stick his ear out where I can see it!
You blew his ear off, Preacher.
You goddamn right I did. Of course, since his brain was right on the other side of his ear, I reckon that ball went right on through and messed it up a mite, too.
Hombre coming up on your side, Matt.
Matt raised his rifle.
Not anymore. Obliged for the heads up, Smoke.
Somebody's gotta watch out for you, youngster.
Oh, hell, you're fine when it be calling anyone youngster. You ain't much more to kid yourself, Smoke. Why, it don't seem like it's been more than a year or two since I first come on you and your pa down on the Santa Fe Trail.
That was nigh on 15 years ago, Preacher.
Well, when you get as old as I am, years flow by like water in a high mountain creek. Those years are sweet as water, too. I still drink deep of them.
I believe that.
The trio had been holed up in the cabin since a little before noon. It was around 2 o'clock in the afternoon now, and the sweltering cabin would just get hotter as the day went on. Preacher ran his fingers through his tangled white beard. He was dressed head to foot in buckskins and had a broad-brimmed leather hat thumbed back on thin and white hair. An eagle feather was stuck in the hat band. He had a Colt 44 holstered on his right hip and a sheathed bowie knife on his left. This was his 81st birthday, but somewhere along the way he had become as timeless and ancient as the mountains, weathered slowly but hardly weakened. He could ride all day, he could whip men less than half his age, and he could drink just about anybody under the table. He'd been naught but a boy when he went west, where he had remained by and large ever since for more than 6 decades. He was a mountain man, one of the last of that hardy breed. He was also something of a surrogate father to Smoke Jensen, having taken the boy under his wing when Smoke's own father Emmon had been killed. Smoke hadn't been known by that name then. He'd been born Kirby Jensen. Preacher was the one who had dubbed him Smoke that long ago day when Kirby, Emmon, and Preacher had been ambushed by a Kiowa war party. Maybe it was because of the powder smoke that filled the air when Kirby Jensen received his baptism of fire. Or maybe it was because his ash blonde hair was almost the color of smoke. But whatever the reason, the handle stuck. And from that day forward, he'd been Smoke Jensen. He wasn't a boy anymore, but rather a man in the prime of life, just over 6 feet tall with shoulders as broad as an axe handle. Down in Colorado, he had a damn fine ranch called the Sugarloaf and an even finer wife named Sally. He had a reputation, too, as a man who was fast on the draw, maybe the fastest on the entire frontier. Smoke had no desire to live the life of a gunfighter, though. He drew the walnut-butted .44 on his hip only when he had to. But as many men had learned to their short-lived but final regret, he didn't cotton to being pushed around. Just as Preacher had helped Smoke out when he was orphaned, so Smoke had taken in Matt Cavanaugh, who had lost his family at an even younger age. That was back in the days before Smoke had settled down, when he was still searching for gold in Colorado. He had found it, and since Matt helped him work the claim, Smoke felt that Matt deserved an equal share in it. He had also taught Matt everything that Preacher had taught him about how to survive on the frontier, and more importantly, how to live his life as a decent, honorable man. When the time came for Matt to strike out on his own, as a tribute to the man who had become like an older brother to him, he had taken Smoke's last name, and ever since, he'd been known as Matt Jensen. It was a name that was becoming more widely known, as Matt was drawn to danger and adventure like a moth to flame. He wasn't reckless, but he didn't back down when challenged. So the three men who waited in the stifling cabin in the Bighorn Mountains shared not a drop of common blood, and yet they were family.
Good God.
Preacher squinted over the barrel of his sharps through the loophole.
Those hombres must not have the sense God gave a badger. Here they come again.
Son of a gun!
Matt was forced to draw back momentarily from his loophole. So were Smoke and Preacher.
More coming out the trees!
Smoke saw men dart out from cover, race past their companions who were firing from behind the stumps, and then dive behind other stumps.
They're leapfrogging at us, blast it!
That wasn't the only trickery going on.
Circling to your left, Matt!
Matt twisted in that direction and thrust the barrel of the Winchester through an opening. There was only one thing to do. Smoke leaned his Winchester against the wall, threw aside the bar that kept the door closed, drew one of the long-barreled .44s he carried in his holster, and yanked the door open. Palming out the other Colt, he leaped outside, landing on his belly. Smoke's left-hand gun slammed bullets into the bodies of the men charging at the cabin head-on. The right-hand Colt tracked the gunnies who were trying to circle in that direction. Smoke scrambled to his hands and knees and dived back through the doorway. Matt hurried after him, slamming the door closed and dropping the bar in its brackets again.
You give them old boys what for?
I reckon we did, Preacher. The last I saw, they were skedaddling back to the trees.
Ones who could still move, that is.
It was a mite of a hornet's nest in here. Plenty of slugs flying around.
Preacher touched a gnarled finger to his cheek, and the tip came away bloody.
Well, felt like one of them kissed me. Sure enough, it did.
Bannerman must be paying those boys pretty well. That many gun wolves don't come cheap.
If there's one thing Reese Bannerman has, it's money, and plenty of it.
Then why's a dang fool want more? Why is it so all-fired important that he steal this valley from Crazy Bear's people?
Smoke picked up his rifle again and took his place at the loophole. He peered out at the silent trees where the gunmen were hidden.
I guess some men never get enough, no matter how much they have.
Well, I ain't gonna let it happen. We're gonna get out of this fix somehow and show Bannerman he can't get away with it. I owe Crazy Bear a whole heap of thanks for what he'd done for me. That's why I come a-running when I heard he was in trouble.
Crazy Bear's a good man. I was glad to help out when I got your letter, Preacher.
Good thing I was visiting Smoke at Sugarloaf at the time, because I want to be in on this too.
You just want to see Crazy Bear's daughter again.
I won't deny that.
You young fellas may be fond of Crazy Bear, but I owe the old rapscallion my life. I ever tell you that story, Smoke?
I don't think so.
As a matter of fact, Preacher had told him that story before. But it was a pretty good yarn, and they needed something to pass the time while they waited for Bannerman's hired guns to attack him again. So as the three men stood and watched, and the heat grew worse in the cabin, Preacher told his tale.
Well, it was about 30 years ago, I reckon. I was on my way through the same valley, where no ranches nor towns here about in those days. It's still mighty wild country, and it might cost a man his hide if he didn't keep his eyes open.
The tall man in buckskin sensed it coming as he rode along the edge of the trees. He saw a chipmunk that raised its head from a burr in the clearing 50 yards to his left, and a squirrel that bounded from branch to branch in a pine tree off to his right. Somehow, Preacher kept the fingers of his right hand clamped around the long-barreled flintlock rifle that he'd been carrying across the saddle in front of him. He had a couple of those newfangled Colt Dragoon revolvers that he picked up in St. Louis. They were tucked behind his belt. If he could get to cover, he knew he could give a good accounting of himself. Still clutching the rifle, Preacher rolled to his right, closer to the trees. It was a good thing he moved when he did. Preacher kept rolling. He finally made it to the edge of the pines. He tried to take a deep breath, but that made the pain in his left side worse. His left side was covered with warm, sticky wetness. He thought he might bleed to death if the hole wasn't bound up soon. Holes, more than one. He corrected himself as he gingerly poked around on his side. The rifle ball had struck him in the back on the left side, glanced off a rib, and torn its way out the front of his body. He pulled up his buckskin shirt and used the heavy hunting knife that was sheathed on his hip to cut two strips from his long underwear. He managed to wad one of the pieces of woolen fabric into a ball, and he shoved it into the exit wound. Since he couldn't reach the spot with his right hand, he gritted his teeth and forced his left arm to reach around his back to where the bullet had entered. A few minutes it took seemed more like an hour, but he finally pushed the wadded-up cloth into the bullet hole. He didn't know how many enemies there were, nor did he know who they were. He had spent 5 decades on the earth, testified by the leathery skin of his face and the numerous silver strands in his dark hair and beard. Few men live that long without making enemies. Preacher was disgusted with himself for letting somebody shoot him in the back. He didn't know where they'd been hidden or how carefully they had concealed themselves, but he didn't care. He should have known they were there, lying in wait for him. There was a time when he would have known too, because dog would have smelled the sons of bitches, and horse probably would have too. But the big wolf-like cur was gone. And so was the gray stallion that looked a lot like Preacher's current mount. Over the years, Dog had tangled with outlaws, savages, grizzlies, panthers, and lobo wolves. He'd gotten chewed up, shot, half-drowned, and mostly frozen. None of that had killed him, but time had. The years always won in the end. Horse, at least, was still alive as far as Preacher knew. He had left the stallion in Missouri with an old friend who had promised to make Horse's final years as comfortable and pleasant as possible. A grin that was half grimace drew Preacher's lips back from his teeth. He reached to his waist and drew out one of the dragoons. They had him surrounded.
We gonna kill you, old man, if you ain't dead already. You got anything to say?
Preacher didn't respond, except to draw his other dragoon. His left arm was still weak, but he was able to hold the revolver fairly steady.
You should have minded your own business back at that trading post, old man. You must be soft in the head. Who in his right mind would kick up such a fuss over some damn Indian whore?
So that was why they wanted him dead. they had trailed him all the way out there, a week or more over some fracas at a trading post. He supposed that the fellow whose guts he'd spilled on the ground meant something to him. A friend, maybe kinfolk. Even so, that man had been a sorry son of a bitch, hardly worth dying over. Seemed like they were bound and determined to do just that, though.
Shut up, Riley. That's enough. Let's get this done. You boys ready?
Preacher was ready. He braced his back against the tree trunk and raised both dragoons in front of him. Preacher spotted a muzzle flash off to his right and reacted instantly. With his back against the tree to brace himself, Preacher pushed to his feet.
What the hell is that?
Head for the horses! Let's get the hell out of here!
Preacher could hear men crashing through the brush. He let them go without sending any more lead after them. Blood still oozed from the holes in his side, and he was starting to get a little dizzy. Best to let those varmints vamoose. Oh. When Preacher felt himself slipping, he tried to stiffen his legs, but it didn't work. Oh. Something was coming, something big from the sound of it. The thing came closer, stepping around the trees and pushing brush aside. A looming shape finally came to a stop directly in front of him, and his Preacher gazed up at it. His vision cleared just enough for him to realize that it was not a grizzly bear like he had suspected. It was the biggest, ugliest Indian Preacher had ever laid eyes on. And the last thing Preacher saw as consciousness fled from him. The aromatic smell of wood smoke filling his nostrils was the first thing Preacher recognized as awareness began to seep back into his brain. Then, not surprisingly, he heard the crackle of flames and felt warmth on his face. After a moment, he figured out he was lying on something soft near a fire. He moved a hand slightly and felt something soft yet bristly. A thick fur robe of some sort. Under the wood smoke smelled bear grease and something else, a faint musky scent, a woman. All those sensations were intimately familiar to him. He'd spent many winters with various tribes, sharing a lodge or a teepee with a comely squaw. As he lay on the fur robe, Preacher thought about what he remembered from earlier, and decided that the big, ugly Indian must have taken him to a village rather than kill him. He kept his eyes closed, shifted his body a little, and realized he had bandages wrapped tightly around his torso. His side felt stiff and hot where the rifle ball had torn through it, but whoever attended to the wounds had packed each of them with a healing poultice. Preacher knew that with time and proper care, he would heal. From what Preacher had been able to see of the beadwork and decorations on the big Indian's buckskins, he thought the man was a Crow. The Crow got along with white men about as well as any of the tribes did, and better than some. Preacher heard the woman moving around, and then she was beside him. He felt the cool touch of a wet cloth on his skin as she wiped his face with it. He thought he might as well go ahead and take a chance. He opened his eyes.
He lives!
Yeah, I do live. Thanks to you.
The woman shook her head. She was young, probably no more than 20 summers. She had a round, pretty face with dark eyes. Her hair, as black as a raven's wing and slick with bear grease, was parted in the center and pulled into braids on each side of her head.
You live because of Crazy Bear. He is the one who brought you here.
You bound up my wounds?
Yes, after packing them with moss and herbs that will heal them.
Then I owe you a debt of gratitude as well. How are you called?
Brightleaf.
Well, thank you, Brightleaf. I'm called Preacher.
Ghost Killer.
He saw fright in her big dark eyes and shook his head, wanting to reassure her.
That's one of the names the Blackfeet know me by, but I've never been an enemy to the Crow.
Despite his words, Brightleaf scooted away from him and stood up, backing around the fire ring in the center of the teepee.
I will go and tell Crazy Bear that you have returned to life. Stay there. Rest.
There wasn't much else he could do except follow her orders. He felt as weak as a newborn kitten. Even if he could make it to his feet, he doubted he could walk across the teepee, let alone go outside and wander off. Only a couple of minutes passed before the hide flap was swept aside, this time by a muscular arm as big around as the trunk of a small tree. The warrior who came into the teepee had to stoop low to make it through the entrance. When he straightened to his full height, he stood near the center of the teepee so his head wouldn't poke against the sloping hide wall. In the glow of the fire, Crazy Bear didn't seem quite as ugly as he had in broad daylight. It softened the harsh planes and angles of his face, made the scars less noticeable, and the broken, crooked lump of his nose didn't dominate his features quite as much. Brightleaf came into the teepee behind the man and peeked timidly around his massive form at Preacher.
Brightleaf tells me you're the one called Ghost Killer.
This is true, but as I told her, Crow are not my enemies.
This is good. Our village will not have to fear you.
No. I'm plumb friendly.
I am called Crazy Bear. I lead this band of my people.
Thank you for saving my life.
I did not save your life. The Ghost Killer cannot die.
Oh, you saw how much blood I lost, Crazy Bear. You hadn't helped me, I would have died, believe me. But even before I could bleed to death, those men would have killed me. So thank you for stopping them. I suppose it was you that made that terrible noise.
You call the laugh of Crazy Bear terrible? There were 6 of the white men and I was alone. I thought it best to make them afraid in hopes they would flee.
Yeah, well, you were right about that. You got a hold of at least one of them, didn't you?
2 had broken arms when they fled.
Should have broken their necks.
We will kill them another day, eh, Ghost Killer?
You got a deal, Crazy Bear. We'll kill them another day.
As it turned out, Brightleaf was Crazy Bear's cousin. She was a widow. Her husband of less than a year had been killed in a rock slide several months earlier. Preacher understood a little better why Crazy Bear had taken him back to the Crow Village. If Brightleaf's late husband had had a brother, he would have taken Brightleaf as one of his wives. Since that wasn't the case, Crazy Bear felt like it was his job to find his cousin a new man. If she nursed the wounded white man back to health, then, out of gratitude to her and to her cousin Crazy Bear, surely the man called Preacher would take her as his wife. Nature would run its inevitable course. Well, Preacher had something to say about that. He wasn't anywhere near ready to settle down. When Preacher had gained some of his strength back, he sat outside most of the day and enjoyed his surroundings. The women and children avoided him, casting nervous glances at him from a distance. Despite the fact that he seemed harmless, he had a reputation as a bloody-handed murderer of men. Eventually, after he'd been in the village about 2 weeks and the wounds in his side were almost completely healed, the moment arrived that he'd been expecting. Brightleaf came into the teepee one evening wrapped in a buffalo robe instead of wearing her usual buckskin dress. She stood before him and let the robe slide off her shoulders so that it fell around her feet. Underneath it, she was all smooth, coppery skin and firm flesh. She lowered her eyes, shy but proud, as Preacher's gaze played over her body.
Oh, I would not be a good husband to you, Brightleaf. You wake up one morning and I'll be gone. I wouldn't be here to hunt meat for you.
I know. Crazy Bear has told me I should keep looking for a husband. But I want you, Preacher. If only for tonight. I want you.
He reached up to her and drew her down next to him. As long as she knew what sort of man he was, he would not deny her. Judging by the solemn, even angry expression on Crazy Bear's face when he walked up to the log where Preacher was sitting the next day, Preacher thought the chief must know what had happened between him and Brightleaf the night before. That hunch grew stronger when Crazy Bear sat down beside him.
The time has come for us to talk.
All right, Crazy Bear, we'll talk.
Those white men who tried to kill you, why did they seek to take your life?
Why do you ask this?
Because soon you will be strong enough to go after them and settle the debt for what they did to you. I would like to know the sort of man whose life I saved, and the best way to know a man is to know his enemies.
Preacher thought that over and nodded. Crazy Bear was right, true enough.
You know Boldly's place?
The white man's trading post in Antelope Creek?
Yeah, that's right.
The fortress-like trading post had been built at the height of the fur trade by an Englishman named Boldly, who erected his establishment at the southern end of the Bighorns, about a week's ride from the valley. It was still there. Men who ventured into the mountains in search of pelts usually stopped at the trading post to replenish their supplies before continuing.
I was at Boldly's. No one else was there except the old man, his wife, and another Indian woman who was a lot younger.
One who sells herself to the white men?
Well, seven men rode in. I didn't like the looks of them, but I wasn't hunting for trouble. I had stew and a bowl of beans and a jug, so I stayed where I was at the table in the corner and let those fellows come stomping in like they owned the damn place.
There are some men who feel they own every place they happen to be.
Yeah, that's right, and they were that kind. They yelled orders at Boldly. They yelled some more when you didn't jump fast enough. Made the old man mad. He's an Englishman, but he still got some bark on him. He didn't say anything, though. Well, there were seven of them, after all. His wife was there.
And it was not your fight.
Yeah, 7-2 ain't much better odds than 7-1. Anyway, I hope they bluster around for a while, get the supplies they're after, and leave. But then they saw the young woman, and I hate to say it, but they didn't figure on riding out until each one of them had a turn with her.
That is why she was there.
Yeah, that's true. And if they'd all been gents about it, I reckon that would have been the end of it. But I heard the others talking, and I reckon one of them, a man called Axel, liked to treat his women rough, see? They told him he had to wait until last, because by the time he got through with the woman, no other man would want to lay with her. Hell, I didn't like it either. But I kept telling myself it's none of my business. Crazy Bear, I sat there for a long time trying to convince myself to stay out of it. I mean, it must have been, 3-4 minutes. Then I got up and I told Boldly I was going to go tend to my horses.
But you did not tend to your horses.
Hell no, I went around to the back of the place to the little cabin next to the barn where the woman took the men. It was dark by then and they'd all been out there except for Axel. He's waiting in the trading post for the last one to come back so he could take his turn. I stayed in the shadows until Axel came out.
You struck him down from ambush?
No, I wouldn't do that, even to a skunk like this Axel was supposed to be. Anyway, there was a chance that things the other men said were just empty talk.
Crazy Bear nodded. Some men were as full of hot air as a sweat lodge.
It didn't work out that way. I wanted to see what he'd do. He'd been in that cabin more than a couple of minutes when I heard his fist striking that girl. She cried out and begged him not to hurt her. He just laughed at her.
So you stopped him?
Oh, I stopped him. I beat that boy well nigh to death. He pushed the fight, and I had no choice but to oblige him. And before he came to, I just grabbed my horse and gear and took off on my way.
You did not think his friends would be able to follow you.
I didn't think they'd bother. They didn't seem all that fond of Axel, but I reckon I misjudged them. Yeah, they came after me.
It must have been hard for a man like you to leave instead of fight.
When a man gets to be my age, there are times when he's tired of killing.
I have not seen as many summers as you, my friend, but enough so that I know what you say is true. But now that they have come after you, you will go after them.
They had their chance to let it go. Now it's my turn.
The next day, Preacher and Crazy Bear were sitting on rocks outside the teepee Preacher had shared with Brightleaf, planning their next move.
Ah, cheater!
Crazy Bear rose to his great height.
There's trouble.
He strode off, his long legs carrying him quickly toward the source of the commotion. Preacher went after him, caught up by the time they reached a group of warriors and women clamoring around someone. The crowd parted. Preacher frowned when he saw a young warrior in blood-stained buckskins lying on the ground. An older woman, probably the boy's mother, was on her knees beside him. Crazy Bear knelt on the young man's other side and slid a big hand under his shoulders.
What happened to you, Anteater? Where is your brother?
Stormcloud is dead. White men shot him. The same white men who shot me.
Crazy Bear lifted Anteater's shirt to check the wound. Preacher saw a red-rimmed bullet hole on the right side of the youngster's chest. The ball must have penetrated Anteater's lung.
Where were these white men?
Near Owl Rock. So Stormcloud and I were hunting there. We did not see them until they opened fire on us.
How many?
Not sure. As many as the fingers of both hands. Maybe more.
The men from Bodley's place?
That could be. There were only six of them when I rode away from there, but they could have joined up with some other fellas. Crazy Bear turned his attention back to the wounded anteater.
Did you fight them?
No. We never had a chance to fight back. They just shot us and then laughed about it. I heard them while I lay in the grass, unable to move. They thought I was dead. And they said killing Redskins was great sport.
Oh, that sounds like the same bunch, all right. No good polecats, every damn one of them.
I did not understand all their words, but I heard them say they would wait there for the wagons. Then, when they were no longer looking at me, I crawled away and hid and rested until I could come back here.
You are certain that Stormcloud was dead?
Anteater lifted a shaking hand and touched a finger to the center of his forehead.
One of the bullets hit him here.
Crazy Bear nodded grimly. No one could survive a wound like that.
I had to come back to tell her mother what happened.
Crazy Bear lowered him to the ground again and stood up, stepping back to let the women of the tribe take over. They would tend to the body and to the grieving mother. Crazy Bear and Preacher walked back toward Preacher's teepee.
It will not be easy. 2 against 10 or more.
Yeah, we'll be able to take them by surprise. They don't know we know they're at Owl Rock.
What are these wagons they spoke of?
I don't know. There's been some talk back in the settlements about trying to establish a trail up the east side of the Bighorns, offshoot of the Oregon Trail that would lead to the Montana country. Damn fool idea if you ask me. Too many Sioux and Cheyenne up there to ever settle that territory for good. Somebody could be trying to take a wagon train in that direction. Now, if a bunch of outlaws was to hide at Owl Rock, they could ambush any wagon that came along. That's what they got planned. I sure would like to put a stop to it.
I care nothing about any white settlers. Their wagons wear great ruts in the earth. Their numbers crowd the land. They should all go back and leave this country to the real people. You are well enough to travel and to fight?
Just let me get my gear together. Crazy Bear had brought Preacher's saddle mount and pack animal back to the village the day he had saved the mountain man from being ambushed. In the 3 weeks since, the horses had been grazing nearby, growing fat and lazy. They'd have to start earning their keep again. Preacher's guns and supplies were in the teepee. When he walked up, Brightleaf was standing there, a worried look on her face.
Some of the women told me what happened to Anteater and Stormcloud. They say you are leaving, Preacher.
Yeah, Crazy Bear and I are going after the men who killed those young fellas.
These are the same men who hurt you?
I don't know. They could well be. Or they might belong to a different bunch. I won't know till I lay eyes on them.
Either way, they are bad men. cruel, ruthless.
I don't reckon there's much doubt about that.
You are not well enough.
Thanks to you, I am well, or close enough that it doesn't matter.
Then I wish I had not taken such good care of you. I wish you were still too weak to throw your life away like this.
I don't intend on throwing anything away, especially my life.
But you do not know what will happen.
Nobody does. It's one of the things that keeps life interesting.
Life is safer when it is not interesting.
Preacher couldn't dispute that. Safer, maybe, but a whole hell of a lot more boring. I have to go get my things.
I will not stop you. When you have killed the men you seek, will you come back to our village?
I might come back someday.
But not now.
No, not now.
Are 10 or 12 men enough to stop and rob an entire wagon train?
Crazy Bear and Preacher rode through the Bighorn Mountains toward Owl Rock, following trails that were well known to both the Crow Chief and the White Mountain Man. Depends on the size of the wagon train. I've seen some with 100 more wagons, and no, I don't reckon a gang that size would attack such a big train, but this may be a smaller group of wagons. If those renegades know the wagons will be passing by Owl Rock, they must know how many are in the train. They could shoot the driver on each wagon and bring the whole train to a stop. Then it would just be a matter of picking off the outriders and killing one of the lead oxen in every team. That'd bog the wagons down so they couldn't move for sure. Pilgrims who were left could either surrender or they could try to fight it out. Either way, they wouldn't have much of a chance stuck in the open like that.
Perhaps if they surrendered, those men would take their goods and let them go.
You really believe that after the way they murdered Anteater and Stormcloud just for the sport of it?
No, I do not.
Of course, we don't know yet that there is a wagon train or when it's gonna get here. All we got to go by is what a mortally wounded boy overheard.
Anteater was a clever young man. I trust his words.
Well, it's good enough for me then. Suddenly, Preacher saw a column of black smoke rising into the sky several miles to the east. Son of a bitch, look yonder.
I see it. The wagons Anteater spoke of.
Yeah, more than likely. Come on. The two men rode hard toward the smoke. They topped a ridge and pounded down the forest slope. The burning remains of a dozen covered wagons came into view. The flames were beginning to die down as the canvas coverings and the boards were consumed, leaving only the iron wheels and framework of the wagons, but a considerable amount of black smoke still billowed skyward. A few dead oxen lay in their traces, but most of the animals were gone. The raiders must have gathered them up and driven them away. They could use some of the oxen for meat and trade the others to the Indians for pelts. The ground around the wagons was littered with bodies. The preacher's face hardened into a grim mask as he saw them sprawled in attitudes of death.
We're too late.
Yeah. They must have attacked the wagons not long after they shot Anteater and Stormcloud. We never had a chance to stop them. Wagons probably came along before we'd even left the village. Bastards haven't been gone long, though. They took their time about looting the wagons and setting them on fire. They rode up to the first wagon and reined in. The preacher recognized right away that it wasn't actually the lead wagon. Marks on the ground told him that several others had been driven away from there. Preacher pointed out the tracks to Crazy Bear. They moved everything they wanted from the other wagons into the first two or three and burned the others. And they rode off and took their loot with them. Preacher swung down from the saddle and moved to the nearest of the corpses. Rolling the man onto his back, Preacher saw that he'd been shot several times. Lifeless eyes stared up at the late afternoon sky.
We better check them all, make sure they're dead. Should we not pursue the men who did this?
We will. But with those wagons full of loot, they ain't gonna be able to move very fast. There's only a couple of hours of daylight left. They'll have to make camp, and that's when we'll catch up to them.
Then Ghost Killer will strike.
Preacher and Crazy Bear continued checking the sprawled corpses. Preacher noting with anger that there were a number of older women and children among the bodies. No younger women, though, or girl children older than 10 or 12. Preacher took note of that as well. and his face grew even bleaker as he realized what it meant. The renegades had taken prisoners with them.
They will sell the women and girls as slaves to the northern tribes. Sometimes Blackfeet and Sioux will deal with white men if it means bringing misery to other whites.
Yeah, I know. Them having prisoners is gonna make our job harder. Those skunks won't hesitate to use the women and girls as hostages.
Perhaps we should have brought more of my warriors with us.
No, this is still a two-man job. As long as it's the right two men. Instantly, Preacher sprang to the wounded man's side, knelt, and carefully turned him over. The wounded man was a stocky old-timer with a bald head, except for a fringe of gray hair around his ears. Take it easy, old-timer. We're friends. The old man's pain-racked gaze moved past Preacher to Crazy Bear, who stood there looking down at him.
That's an Injun.
He won't hurt you. He's a friend of mine. I'm Preacher. He's Crazy Bear. What's your name?
John Spaulding. I'm glad you're a preacher, mister. And I need somebody to pray over my grave.
Don't you worry about that, Mr. Spaulding. You're gonna be fine. Can you tell us what happened here?
Those damn Mayhews.
You know who did this to you?
Yeah, Clint Mayhew and his brothers. Probably some other no-good scoundrels.
How'd you know them?
They were supposed to come with us to Montana, but they've been causing trouble. Our wagon master made them all leave the train before we ever veered off from the Oregon Trail.
Do you know how many there were?
Not sure. All hell broke loose. There was so much shooting. It had to be at least a dozen of the bastards, maybe more.
When they left, they took the prisoners with them, didn't they?
Yeah. They took everybody's money and valuables, piled them in a wagon. And then they got the women and girls. Made them get in a couple other wagons. I heard them yelling orders. I heard the women screaming and crying, but I couldn't see much. I was already shot to pieces.
Mayhews and their bunch headed north?
Yeah, I think so. Are you gonna go after them?
Oh, we are. We'll do everything we can to rescue those women and settle the score with Mayhew and his bunch.
How many of you are there?
Just the two of us.
Just two? You can't... Oh, Lord.
Preacher saw the light go out of his eyes and the lines of agony on his face ease.
There was nothing you could do for him. He was dead before we got here, only his body did not know it yet.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I should have lied and told him there's more than two of us. He might have gone out with a little more hope that we'd be able to help those women.
The two of us will have to be enough.
Yeah, we will. After burying the dead on the wagon train, the two men had followed the tracks left by the wagon wheels until it was too dark to see anymore. They stopped to let their horses rest and to talk over the situation.
If those old boys are dumb enough to build a fire, we can probably find them tonight. If they're not, we may have to catch up tomorrow and follow them just out of sight until nightfall again. I'd just as soon not have to do that. The longer those women and girls are in their hands...
If we go ahead in the dark, we risk losing their trail.
Well, if we do, it ought to be easy enough to pick up again in the morning. They've been running parallel with the mountains all the way from Owl Rock.
I think we should go on and try to find their camp tonight.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. We'll take it slow and easy so they won't hear us coming.
After resting the horses for a short time longer, the two men mounted up and rode northward again. Their eyes constantly searched the darkness for the light of a campfire. There was nothing like that to be seen, so their other senses came into play. Preacher reined to a halt and signaled Crazy Bear to do likewise.
I smell it too, but I see nothing.
They probably stopped just before dark and built a fire to cook their supper and then put it out. They got their pipes going, too, but those don't give off enough light for us to see them.
We should go forward on foot now.
Yeah, just what I was thinking. Preacher and Crazy Bear dismounted and led their horses toward the hills. When they reached a small grove of slender trees, they tied the animals there and worked their way along the line of hills that curved to the northwest. Like shadows flitting through the darkness, they followed their noses toward the enemy camp. The smell of wood smoke faded, but the aroma of tobacco drew them on. As it grew stronger, they dropped to the ground and proceeded on their hands and knees.
Leave that gal alone. I think she's had enough.
Damn it, Clint! You and Walt had your turns with her. Now I ought to get a chance.
We'll take one of the others.
All right. I'll see if I can find one nobody got at yet.
You do that.
We cannot allow that man to harm any of the women.
I could drop him from here with a rifle shot, but it's gonna make it a lot harder to get all of them free.
The large group seemed to be coming straight toward the camp. Some of the outlaws turned toward the sound and lifted their rifles. One of the outlaws stepped forward.
Welcome, Red Moccasins.
Red Moccasins. He's a Sioux war chief. We're too late to save the prisoners from being handed over to them.
Even at that distance, Preacher could tell an atmosphere of tension filled the camp as the dust from the arrival of the Sioux warriors settled. The darkness made it impossible to get an accurate count, but he estimated that the newcomers numbered about 30. The white men were betting their lives the Indians would abide by whatever bargain had been struck with them.
Greetings, Lupton. What do you have for us this time?
Great bounty, Chief. 50 oxen, nearly half that many female slaves.
Oxen? What need do the Sioux have of oxen when there are more buffalo on the plains than there are stars in the sky?
You don't have to hunt these critters, Chief, and risk having some of your warriors caught in a stampede. You can slaughter one for meat anytime you need to.
A true warrior fills his belly and the bellies of his family with his own skills. Only a woman would do as you say.
I apologize, Red Moccasins. I know better than to make an offer like that to a man such as yourself. We will keep the oxen, but the slaves are yours. We ask only safe passage through your lands and a dozen buffalo hides.
And all the loot they already stole from the wagon train.
The Blackfeet would have taken the oxen as well as the prisoners. Those white men were ready for whichever tribe they encountered.
Yeah, it sure ain't Lupton's first trade.
You have a jug?
Of course.
The chief gestured with his lance again. He and his men began to dismount.
Build a fire. The chief and I are going to parley.
There would be a lot of talk before Lupton and Red Moccasin settled the details of the deal they were striking. The parley might last until morning. The rest of the Sioux and the other outlaws would share the whiskey the white men had brought along and most likely share the women as well. It would be a long, ugly night. But it could pay some dividends for Preacher and Crazy Bear. By morning, a lot of their enemies would be drunk and less alert.
We cannot kill all of them. Not even Ghost Killer could do that.
Yeah, you're right about that. And we can't drive off those wagons either. That'd be too slow. We'll have to slip in before dawn, take the women out of there on foot. Then we'll stampede the horses through the camp and scatter them. Maybe that'll give us time to get the women into the hills and hide them.
It is not a great plan, but with 2 against 50, it is all we can do.
The white outlaws had kindled a fire and they heaped wood on it until the flames leaped high and cast a garish light over the camp. In that glare, Preacher and Crazy Bear got their first good look at their enemies. The man called Lupton, who sat down to negotiate with Red Moccasins, was tall and rail thin with a jutting spade beard. Preacher recognized the Mayhews from his encounter with them at Bodley's trading post. They were all brawny, fair-haired men. Clint Mayhew, the oldest and the leader of the clan, sported a silvery beard. The rest of the outlaws were typical frontier scum. Some dressed in homespun and whipcord, the others in buckskins. They were heavily armed. Preacher saw lots of rifles and pistols around the camp, although all the pistols seemed to be single-shot flintlocks. He didn't spot any of the new Colt revolvers, just dragoons like he carried, or earlier model Pattersons. After a while, Lupton stood up and went over to the wagons.
Climb out of there, ladies. Make it quick now.
The women climbed out of the wagons. Red Moccasin walked up and down the line of prisoners, leering at them. Preacher turned his head in the direction of some nearby rustling, and he frowned. He tapped Crazy Bear on the shoulder and nodded in that direction. Crazy Bear returned the nod. Preacher crawled through the grass toward the rustling. When he was in position, he lay still and let whoever was skulking through the grass come to him. The growth parted near him. He waited until the woman was right beside him to make his move. Keeping her pinned down, Preacher put his mouth next to her ear.
I'm a friend. Stop fighting, lady. I'm here to help you. Don't you try to get away, and don't you make a sound, you understand? I'll let go of you, but you gotta promise you won't yell or jump up.
A couple of seconds went by, and then the woman nodded.
All right, I'm gonna take my hand away from your mouth. You make a racket, you'll get us all killed, you understand?
He moved his hand away. She didn't cry out. She just lay there.
Thank you.
I won't get off of you now.
Preacher slid to the ground beside her. While he was lying on top of her, he had felt the long hair that hung down her back.
Did any of those varmints hurt you?
No, not yet. That big, ugly one. Jord, he was the first who tried.
Preacher gathered from her dark hair and thick accent that this woman was of gypsy descent. He had seen gypsies on some of his trips back east in St. Louis and Philadelphia.
I'm called Preacher. What's your name?
Mala.
Mala, it's a pretty name. You got any kinfolk in those wagons?
My brother's wife, Nadia. I was traveling with her and my brother, Gregor. And also my father and grandfather. They are all dead now, except for me and Nadia.
I'm sorry. My friend and I saw the wagon train and we know what happened. We've been trailing that bunch ever since.
You followed us? Why?
To help you ladies who were captured. And to settle a score with the Mayhews and the rest of those varmints they're with. They killed some young men from the village where my friend lives.
Your friend? He's a savage?
He's a Crow chief, but he won't hurt you. He hates the Sioux, and he hates the Mayhews and their mothers. We're gonna try to get all the gals away from them.
How many men do you have?
The two of us.
There are 40 men in that camp, all of them killers. There's nothing you can do against such odds.
We'll see about that. First, we'll get you somewhere safe that we can leave you.
No. If you're going to try to rescue the others, I will help you.
You were trying to get away.
And I am ashamed that I abandoned my brother's wife and the others. It seemed like there was nothing I could do. But now that I have a chance to fight, now that I can kill some of those terrible men before I die, I would go back.
All right, come on. Stay low. Be as quiet as you can. I'll take you to Crazy Bear.
Crazy Bear?
Yeah, he's kind of big and, well, he's ugly, like a bear.
I do not care. As long as he will help me kill some of those evil men.
We're going to have to kill a lot of them if we're going to have any chance of getting out of here.
As Preacher and Mala crawled back toward the place he'd left Crazy Bear, Preacher lifted his head enough to see what was going on. The flames of the campfire still leaped high in the air. The women had been herded back into the wagons, and the white men and Sioux were passing jugs of whiskey back and forth in celebration. When Preacher and Mala crawled up to Crazy Bear, the Crow Chief had his knife in his hand in case he needed to fight.
It's all right. I brought one of the women back with me. She wants to help us rescue the other women.
But she was fleeing and abandoning them.
She was scared and she didn't know what else to do.
How is she called?
Her name's Mala.
Mala, it is a good name. Very brave.
Give me a weapon. I will show you how brave I am.
Here.
Preacher drew a narrow bladed dirk from a sheath he'd slipped into the top of his left boot, and he pressed the grip into her hand.
I reckon you know how to use it?
Let me at that damn Jordan Mayhew. I will carve off his man parts.
Yeah, well, that sounds mighty entertaining, but I reckon his squalling while you did it would wake up the whole camp. So if you do have to use that blade on one of the varmints, just try to cut his throat instead. That way he can't make much noise.
Yes, what you say makes sense. I will remember. When will we go to the camp?
Not for a while yet. We need to let them Sioux warriors get good and drunk first.
So we wait? Well, God knows what happens to Nadia and the other women?
I don't like it any better than you do, but we don't have any choice if we want to save their lives.
Hours dragged by. The stars wheeled through the sky overhead. Preacher lifted his head occasionally to check the camp, and each time he saw fewer men moving around. Many of the Sioux had passed out from the whiskey, and some of the outlaws were drunk and either asleep or only semi-conscious. Preacher had a strong hunch Lupton posted sentries, and those men would still be awake and alert. Finally, the faintest tinge of gray appeared in the eastern sky.
All right, it's time. We'll split up. Molly and I will circle to the left and head for the wagons to get the women out. Crazy Bear, you go around to the right and close in on the horses. Any sentries you come across, you kill them as quiet as you can.
Signal me when you're ready for me to stampede the horses.
I'll howl like a panther. I can make it sound real good. That'll spook them horses even more. We'll head up into the foothills with the women just as fast as we can. I seem to remember there's a canyon up there that might be a good place to hide them. It's narrow, and one man could hold off quite a few.
I know the place. I will come there when I've killed as many of the enemy as I can.
Yeah, well, don't be too stubborn about it and stay too long. We'll have a better chance of getting those gals out of here if we're both still alive.
Crazy Bear gave a curt nod, then crawled off into the grass, disappearing quickly.
He is big, but not really that ugly.
Yeah, well, you ain't seen him in broad daylight yet.
He motioned to her to follow him and started crawling to his left. He didn't hurry, but he didn't waste any time either. When they reached the trees that covered the slope, Preacher stood up in the thick shadows and reached down to take Mala's arm.
As much as you can, you try to step where I step and let your weight down easy. Mind you keep your balance. Don't let that pig sticker bang against anything.
I will be careful.
Like the ghost the Blackfeet considered him to be, Preacher glided through the shadows under the trees. Each of his senses were operating at peak efficiency. He heard a faint movement up ahead at the same time he smelled unwashed flesh. A sentry leaned against the tree trunk. Preacher drew the long-bladed hunting knife at his waist. Carefully, Preacher lowered the corpse to the ground. He wiped the blade on the man's shirt and straightened it. Touching Mala's arm to let her know that she should follow him, he cat-footed his way toward the wagons again. Another guard stood near the wagons. Preacher waited for a long moment, studying the camp. The fire had burned down some, but it still provided enough light for him to see Lupton and Red Moccasin sitting beside it. Most of the Sioux warriors were sprawled around the camp. Some of the white men were asleep too. A few were still passing a jug back and forth. Preacher didn't see any of the women or girls around the camp, which meant they were all in the wagons. The guard posted near the vehicles moved back and forth, trying to stay awake. Preacher slipped into the thick shadows between the wagons and waited until the guard passed just outside the shrouding darkness. Preacher lowered the body, then turned to Mala.
Come with me.
They slipped along the side of a wagon that was away from the fire. Preacher cut the ropes that held the arching canvas cover over the vehicle and pulled it away from the sideboards.
You do the talking. Tell them to come with us, but be mighty quiet about it, all of you.
I understand.
Mala ducked through the opening Preacher had made.
You must go. Mala, I've come back for you. Be quiet now. We must go.
Preacher held his breath, hoping the women would understand and realize their lives depended on swiftness and silence. After a moment, Mala backed away slightly from the wagon and held the canvas up so one of the captives could climb out of the vehicle. From the size of the dim shape, Preacher figured it was a girl, not a full-grown woman. The escaping prisoner was followed by another, and another.
This is Preacher. He is a friend and will help us get away. Do as he says.
Preacher pointed into the hills.
I want you to head that way, as fast as you can. Be careful. Don't make any more noise than you have to. Watch out for each other, give a hand to whoever needs it, and keep moving no matter what you hear going on back here.
The women and girls were clearly terrified. They understood it was their only chance of escaping the awful fate planned for them. They moved off into the darkness in ones and twos as others continued to climb out of the wagon. When the first wagon was empty, Preacher and Mala moved on to the second one. Preacher cut the canvas loose.
Let's get those other women out.
The second part of the rescue operation went off without a hitch. When all the women were out and moving up the hill through the trees, Preacher turned to Mala.
All right, now you'll have to look after them now. It'll be light soon, so you ought to be able to find your way into the foothills. Keep an eye out for that canyon Crazy Bear and I were talking about. That's where we'll rendezvous with you in a little while.
What are you going to do now?
I'm going to improve the odds as much as I can. Now get going.
Preacher?
No time. Go.
Mala went, hurrying up the wooded slope after the others. Preacher waited until she was out of sight. Then he turned to face the camp. He sure as hell hoped Crazy Bear was ready to stampede those horses. Preacher pulled both the Dragoon Colts from behind his belt, looped his thumbs over the hammers, and stepped out from behind the wagons. Men leaped to their feet, outlaws and Sioux warriors alike. Spooked by the animal-like cries, the herd bolted just as Preacher planned. The horses charged through the camp, pounding their hooves on the ground, trampling anything in their way. Lupton and Red Moccasins leaped aside, barely avoiding the charge. Others scattered and got out of the way, too. Preacher was ready for them. Preacher emptied both guns, killing 8 men with 10 shots. There was no time to reload. Preacher jammed the Colts behind his belt and drew his knife. Gore splattered both arms to the elbows as Preacher wreaked havoc among the outlaws and the Sioux. Preacher spotted the giant crow and hacked his way toward him. Some of the men had taken cover behind the empty wagons and were shooting from there.
Come on, let's go!
They're more to kill!
You'll get your chance later, I reckon. Come on!
Preacher and Crazy Bear turned and ran deeper into the darkness, away from the camp. Preacher let his instincts guide him. He nearly always knew where he was and which direction he needed to go. Within moments, he and Crazy Bear reached the timber on the slope and began to climb above the camp.
It will not take them long to discover we are gone. Then they will come after us.
Yeah, but there ain't nigh as many of them as there was a while ago. I reckon we wiped out more than half of them.
They were about a mile away from camp when Mala suddenly stepped out from some brush and motioned to them.
Preacher! Crazy Bear! Over here!
They veered toward her.
Are they all right?
A few tripped and turned their ankles or scratched themselves on the brush while they were running in the dark. And a few are still in bad shape from what happened to them earlier. But we can all move quickly if we need to.
Did you find that canyon I told you about?
Mala turned and pointed toward the bighorns.
Is that the one you mean?
Yeah, and the others are hidden inside it?
Yes, I stayed out here to wait for you and Crazy Bear.
All right, well, you can head back there now. Crazy Bear, you go with her.
Wait, where are you going?
I need to get our horses. There's not much time. We're liable to need the ammunition that's on my pack horse.
Then Crazy Bear should go with you, to help you.
No, I'd rather he stayed here with you ladies. If anything happens to me, he'll get you out of this mess.